Thank you all so much for being together and spending time with each other, committing to each other during this season. We're growing together, and it's great to see and hear just how each of you are engaging with the practices and exploring that as we continue on the Jesus way, being with Jesus, becoming like Jesus, and doing what Jesus did. This week, we're going to explore a practice that I'm still journeying with. It's a delight and a frustration, but we're going to explore the practice of silence and solitude. Now, if you're like me and you're an introvert, you're quietly kind of going, yes, with joy, whilst the extroverts, you're probably sighing, thinking, surely this self-isolation is enough. Thank you very much. It's interesting, isn't it, this time of restricted movement, where contact with others has been reduced. As we consider this practice of silence and solitude, many of us are struggling with being impacted, essentially by being confined and imprisoned to a place where we can't mix with those that we would want to mix with, where we can't speak and say what we want to say to those we want to say it to. Not able to do what we want when we want to do it. We see something of what this practice does within the human heart being played out in our society. Like so many of the disciplines of abstinence, remember back in week one, we looked at the disciplines of engagement, being fellowship, celebration and worship and others, and the disciplines of abstinence being more silence and solitude and fasting. At the very core of some of these practices is quietening the human desire, quietening that which I want and when I want it. Queen sang about it, didn't it? I want it all, I want it all, and I want it now. Silence and solitude reveals just what is going on deep down inside of us as we slow down and let our souls catch up with our bodies. Self-isolation is revealing to many the stuff that is deep down inside of us, the needs we have, the impulses that need to get their fix. But in self-isolation, what do we do with those needs? What happens to the fixes that our heart has gotten so used to being comforted by? I wonder what it could look like if we, the people of God, could take some time to self-solitude in the midst of all this self-isolation. What's the difference? What's the difference between self-solitude and self-isolation? Well, isolation speaks of a forced retreating due to fear. Solitude is about self-withdrawal due to faith. There's a huge difference between the two. My definition of silence and solitude is a moment of intentional time in the quiet to be alone with God. Because in solitude, we deliberately seek a place to be alone with God. Not because the world is all too much and we just can't cope anymore, but for the sake of the world. So God can do a work deep down inside of us that we in and of ourselves could never ever do. You just read together Matthew chapter 4. It's the temptation of Jesus. It's a well-known story, and I've got to be honest, one that I have misread for years. And because I've misread it, the story really twists in its meaning. Because it's a really strange moment when you look at it. Jesus in chapter 3 has just been baptized. We see the Trinity on full display. The Father speaking affirmation over the Son as the Spirit descends like a dove. This beautiful moment. And at the end of chapter 3, we see the words of the Father. And it closes with these words in chapter 3. This is my Son in whom I am well pleased. And then we read in chapter 4, verse 1, it says that Jesus was then led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. I'm reading that and I'm thinking, whoa, hang on, the Father's just said he's pleased. But now we see the Spirit leading the Son into the wilderness. Does the Father really not like the Son or the Spirit? Are they like out of unity? My concept of the Trinity is getting blown in this moment. He's just spoken how pleased he is, but now the Spirit leads Jesus into the wilderness. A verse that seems so confusing if we read it to mean that the Spirit has just led Jesus into the place of loneliness, of isolation, that place that nobody ever wants to go, in order to bring him down a peg or two, to weaken him, because that's what the wilderness does. Nobody likes the wilderness. And then we see the devil turn up. After 40 days, Jesus is hungry. Yeah, no kidding. I'm not surprised. I would be too. And it's just like the devil to show up when Jesus is at his weakest and then he attacks him. What a horrible devil, typical of how he works. But what happens if the wilderness, that place that the Spirit leads Jesus into, is not the place of weakness, but the very place he gets his strength? What could that mean? That the devil tempting Jesus might have been when he was physically weak, but Jesus was able to overcome because he'd been through the wilderness that caused him to be spiritually strong. That verse 1, the Spirit that led Jesus into the wilderness, is actually showing that Jesus was led into a place where he was able to take the devil and stand up to all the temptation of the devil and defeat him in all of his humanness, because man does not live by bread alone, but every word that comes from the Father. That yes, physically we need sustaining, we need nourishment for our muscles and our bones, but spiritually we need nourishment in order to be fully strengthened, so we can live in the face of all the world, our own flesh, and the devil can throw at us. Matthew 4 shows us that it was in the wilderness this strengthening took place. The word wilderness in the Greek is the word eremos. It's translated wilderness because it means secluded or unpopulated or desert place. It's the same word that's used so much through the life of Jesus. Just before he's about to select his disciples, he goes to the eremos. It's used again in Matthew 14. Jesus just received news about his cousin John the Baptist has been executed. And it says in verse 13 that Jesus withdrew to the eremos, a desolate place, to be by himself. Again, it's the same word used in Mark chapter 6, verse 32. We read that life was so busy for Jesus and his disciples, they didn't even have time to eat their lunch. Have you ever had a day like that? Life is so manic, you realize you haven't even stopped for food or drink, and you're at the end of the day wondering, why have I got this pounding headache? Life has just been so manic. Verse 32 says that in that moment, they went into a boat to a desolate place, to the eremos place. Again, we see in Luke chapter 6, Jesus has just healed a leper, this amazing miracle that if I was Jesus's PR man, I would want to get him out into the public space. Come on, Jesus, we got to get out. We got to spread the word. We want everyone to hear this amazing miracle, because then more people will start to believe that you really are the Messiah. So come on, let's get going. Let's get going. Let's get out there. But instead, we see in verse 16 that Jesus withdraws to the eremos place. And this time we get a little insight into what he does in the eremos. It says that he prayed. Jesus took time out in the most tempting, the busiest, the most exciting, and the most important moments of his life to be in the eremos with the Father. He sought out silence and he sought out solitude, from his baptism through to Gethsemane. Through every emotion and season of life, it is silence and solitude alone that opens up the possibilities of a radical relationship to God that can withstand all the external experiences that we go through. Dallas Willard says that solitude is one of the most radical of the disciplines for life in the Spirit. It's in silence and solitude we close our mouths, we open our eyes and we open our ears. We draw near to listen, which is better than offering the sacrifice of fools, we're reminded of in Ecclesiastes 5. I can tell you that silence and solitude for me is one of the most frustrating places. It's the place where we're forced to confront the comforts of life that we cling to, the need in order to do to feel significance, the need to distract in order to dull the pain, the need to speak in order to quieten the guilt, the need to control in order to present a version of myself that shows the world my significance. Silence and solitude is about dying to self. Henry Nguyen says that in our world, we're constantly pulled away from our innermost self and encouraged to look for answers instead of listening to the questions. Wow, can you imagine what the church could look like if we stopped trying to give answers and started listening to the questions? Because I want answers. God, why did you do that? Why did you let that happen? Why is that person not following you? I need to know what to say to that person when they ask me, God, will you give me wisdom? I ask all of these questions of God. But Henry Nguyen reminds us This is about listening for the questions. Who do you say that I am? Jesus says to his disciples. Not what does your tradition say or what do your circumstances suggest about me? Who do you say that I am? Do you want to get well? Jesus asked the man by the pool. Not just do you want to walk, but do you want to be made whole on the inside and out, healthy and whole? Why are you so afraid? Jesus asks his disciples in the boat during that storm. Are you going to leave as well? Jesus asks those who stood around him as others walked away, too challenged by his teaching. Do you love me? Jesus asked Peter. Do you love me? Do you believe that I can be all that your soul actually needs? Instead of all the other stuff that we fill our lives with, do you really love me? See, silence and solitude frees us to love Jesus. It frees us from the ingrained pace of our world and the patterns and the feelings and the thoughts and the actions that pull us away. And it's in the space we hear those questions, the questions deep at the root of who we are and what we do, that we can't hear because we fill it with so much stuff. But be warned, in silence and solitude, there's a risk. As we confront our own soul with all its needs and all its wants. Quaker author Parker J. Palmer says this, "The soul is like a wild animal, tough, resilient, savvy, self-sufficient, and yet exceedingly shy. If we want to see a wild animal, the last thing we should do is go crashing through the woods, shouting for the creature to come out. But if we are willing to walk quietly into the woods and sit silently for an hour or two at the base of a tree, the creature we are waiting for may well emerge, and out of the corner of an eye we will catch a glimpse of the precious wildness we seek." It's in silence and solitude God reveals himself, and we start to see ourselves, and the two are introduced to each other, and they find an embrace that brings healing, wholeness, restoration, that spills out of our inmost being and starts to impact the world around us. I think that's why Dallas Willard says that this is one of the most radical disciplines for life in the spirit, because it impacts us, and out of the overflow of that starts to change our world. So this week we're going to seek to practice the discipline of silence and solitude. You're going to discuss and unpack this practice and what it looks like for you. That's what's important, what it looks like for you. This will look different for the single to the married person, for those with older kids and younger kids, to the parent and the grandparent. Maybe you've never done this. Maybe you're experienced in this. It looks different for every single one of us. But I want to encourage you and say you probably will be distracted. Don't give up. We live in a world where the human attention span has dropped from 12 seconds to 9 seconds. I thought 12 was pretty bad, but 9. That means we've got a shorter attention span than a goldfish. So as we sit in silence and solitude, we will be distracted. Bring those distractions to God. We will be interrupted. What question is Jesus asking of you in that interruption? I get deeply frustrated when I'm there in silence and solitude, my kids come down and interrupt that moment. What's being revealed in that frustration? Not getting to do what I want, when I want. What's the question that Jesus is asking of me? Maybe that moment of silence and solitude, of dying to self, is actually being practiced in that moment of distraction. Remember, this practice is not the gold, it's the treasure map that leads to the gold, which is about a deeper relationship with Jesus. The distraction might just be the question Jesus is asking of you as you've met him in the silence and the solitude. However much you struggle with this, can I encourage you? It's a practice and it takes practice. Some of these disciplines are more natural for different types of people. You might be an introvert or an extrovert. Please start with where you are and build from there. This is a practice that can change every single person as we seek Jesus in the Eremos. And as we do, I'm so excited to see all that God will do in each one of us and through each one of us as we are led by the Spirit into the Eremos. Enjoy your discussions.